Hello and welcome to the China Business Brief, a podcast by the China Booking Business Council where we explain the latest news relevant to anyone working in or with the world's second largest economy. I'm Joe Cash, and this week I'm joined by Jeff Astle of APCO China for an episode digesting the outcomes of the recent two sessions, or Liang Hui, and how the discussions in Beijing will likely impact on industry as the meeting's policy priorities are pursued. Jeff is the Managing Director of APCO in Shanghai, and the firm has just published its 2022 two sessions special report, which you can find linked in the event description below. Jeff, welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you, Joe.
A quick introduction to our listeners who are perhaps less familiar with the two sessions and why they are so important. These meetings are the annual sittings of the Chinese People's Political Consultative Conference, the CPPCC, and the National People's Congress, NPC. And this year, the meetings took place between March 4th and March 11th. Each year, the government uses the Liang Hui to update on how it considers itself to have performed over the last year and to present the policy priorities for the next legislative cycle. These are then debated, approved, and the work of governing the country can begin again. Jeff, thanks for coming on the podcast. APCO has produced a great report outlining how this year's meetings unfolded and how the policy priorities are likely to impact seven sectors that are heavily invested by multinational companies in the country. Of course, taking the two sessions at large at the beginning, caution and stability appear to have been the name of the game for this year. But unfortunately, the meeting was taking place with the backdrop being Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Do you think that foreign policy is going to play a big role in countries' domestic targets this year? And do you think that the sanctions, the coming together of the countries that are opposing Russia is going to put China's GDP targets at risk, for example?
Joe, I think it's obviously interesting that the emphasis is on caution and stability, not least, I think, because of the challenges that China will be facing domestically. But this sort of global external environment, both in terms of geopolitics and, you know, the terrible scenes in Ukraine, and also the macroeconomic, global macroeconomic environment that the world has been facing as we continue to grapple with supply chain challenges and COVID-related challenges, means I think that it's inevitable that policymakers in Beijing are going to find it a challenging year because of these external factors, because of these external forces, both in terms of foreign policy that you mentioned, but also in terms of sort of economic policies. And so, though it is quite a cautionary, conservative set of targets, it's certainly going to be challenging to achieve.
Of course, this year's GDP target, which is a feature of the Liang Hui, it's announced on the first day when Premier Li Keqiang presents the government work report, is around 5.5%, which is considerably down on the 8.1% that China achieved last year, but is very high compared to the estimates of leading international banks and financial institutions. I mean, Goldman Sachs, for example, estimates that the economy will grow by just 4.3%. So beyond the external environment, what is informing this year's prediction and what levers will China likely pull to achieve it?
Yeah, I think just take a breath and let's think. 5.5% in a global context is high. 5.5% in a Chinese context is very low. And particularly if you look at the second half of last year, it's going to be challenging to achieve. But I do think that China uniquely still has a lot of levers the government can turn to stimulate the economy. I think we'll see more investment in infrastructure, both physical infrastructure and digital infrastructure, as you know, one of the key priorities is to invest heavily in making China a leader in sort of the future digital sectors in the world. So I think we'll see a lot more investment in that space to stimulate growth. I think we'll see encouragement, however they can, to stimulate the consumer sector, whether that's through incentives and support at a local government level. I think it's still nonetheless going to be quite challenging given some of the baseline situation that China faces. As I say, Q3 and Q4 were not as had been expected, but China, you know, has a baseline of around about 5% that it needs to achieve to manage, you know, the inflationary pressures, that we have and the demographic pressures of, you know, sort of a declining workforce and aging population and finding jobs for all the new talent coming into the marketplace. So I do think this is going to be a difficult year to achieve that 5.5%. But I do think that China has enough levers financially and in terms of investments that it can make to support it.
As you mentioned just now, the domestic challenges, they are ramping up. And as a result, I suppose it doesn't come as a surprise that foreign investment and trade feature prominently in the work report. I think trade and investment is policy priority number 5. But how does that square with the reports that are coming out of the multinational banks that, you know, often are supporting companies with their, you know, investments in China, stating that the market is becoming uninvestable because the political risk is becoming too high, there's too much interference in the economy, and that, you know, trends such as Guochao and rising nationalism are just making foreign firms feel unwanted and unable to contribute to China's economy as they would like to?
I think this is the dichotomy. This is the dilemma that we're facing as foreign businesses in China. On the one hand, we're receiving a lot of support and encouragement, and particularly at a local government level, we're seeing businesses being encouraged and supported in their investment, in their growth, and, you know, the rhetoric, the comments from the Liang Kuei are very much supportive of further cooperation across multiple sectors and in multiple areas. At the same time, then, we're hearing an emphasis on supporting the domestic economy, everything from SMEs and up, to move up the value chain, to foster more indigenous innovation so that that can help achieve long-term sustainable growth for the Chinese economy in the context of dual circulation, to make it more resilient to any future sort of global challenges. And all of that sort of paints a picture, I think, for foreign businesses, which is, well, is this an open and welcoming environment for us? And the answer is, it's still opening and welcoming in some cases, but it's going to be more challenging. And I think that our conversations with foreign businesses have been that this is a very complex and uncertain time that they're going to face with so many aspects, whether it's increased compliance and regulatory change and policies that are in their way, from, you mentioned, rising nationalism and the kind of geopolitical environment that we're operating in. We're still dealing with COVID sort of zero tolerance impacts. We've got inflation concerns and you know, fuel prices and energy prices concerns. Talent retention is a challenge. So, you know, that's, in a nutshell, that's what I'm seeing, is that businesses are sort of having to manage very increased uncertainty and increased risk.
And of course, one of the reasons why these businesses are facing the uncertainty that you mentioned is that the Chinese government is relatively opaque. You know, the Liang Kuei, you know, is one opportunity. And it's very important, so important that, you know, we're talking about it today. But then we also have, you know, publications such as the 5-year plans, and we've now had the 14th 5-year plan and the Liang Kuei. So we're beginning to get a slightly better understanding of how the government plans to administer initiatives such as dual circulation strategy, whether common prosperity is going to become a key concern for companies, or whether that is more legislative advocacy. Curiously, it didn't appear particularly in the Liang Kuei this year. APCO's report, it runs through 7 sectors and how China's legislative agenda will likely impact them. Which industries do you see as particularly well-placed following the 14th 5-year plan and this Liang Kuei? And where do you see industry needing to adjust and adapt if it is to continue to make a success of the China market?
Yeah, I used to be pretty clear on which sectors were, you know, the sort of the ones with rapid growth opportunities. In the past, it was sort of healthcare, technology, advanced manufacturing, and consumer goods. We saw the sort of growth in the education sector. But all of those, I think, given the context we said earlier, I mean, all of those are now facing challenges one way or another. And so I think when we're looking at, you know, a sort of landscape of where the opportunities might lie, or where the challenges might lie, I think it's much more checkered these days. We can't look at it sector by sector in the same way. And businesses within a sector really need to sort of find their place So, you know, within sectors that we were seeing lots of growth opportunities, like healthcare, for example, I think there's much more emphasis on the domestic players now, and much more challenges that multinationals are facing. Education sector, you mentioned common prosperity and the double reduction emphasis on the sort of public sector provision. That doesn't mean that there isn't scope and opportunities for the private sector, and we can see that whether it's in private education or digital delivery of content, there's still going to be great opportunities. There are sectors that were doing very well, consumer goods, consumer services. There are sort of macro drivers, COVID and sort of economic slowdown that have hampered those, rather than, I think, policy matters and regulatory matters that are holding them back. And I do think that they will return, but it really requires businesses to be much more agile and, you know, investing in things like sort of digital services, digital delivery of content, and being much more at the sort of localization and focusing on what they're doing in China that's relevant to the local Chinese consumer. So I don't think there's one sector right now that I would say is either very challenged or is full of opportunity. I think it's a very tricky situation.
I like that idea that we've moved to a stage where it's no longer a sector by sector account, and it is that, you know, political and local circumstances are beginning to make themselves felt across the economy as a whole. I mean, obviously some are more vulnerable than others. You mentioned education, that of course got whacked as part of the drive on, you know, income inequality, and people seeing, you know, the after school tuition, you know, driving income inequality. Well, they got quashed by President Xi as he wants to assert his leadership skills as he runs for a third term as the head of state. How do you see the domestic political situation beginning to affect multinational companies? I mean, we've already began hearing at CBBC that things like the data security regime, that's coming in and having a far greater bearing on national security, for example, than, say, in the EU, the UK or the US, and that China is trying to insulate itself more from the world and is becoming more inward looking, and there's less space for multinational companies and their views as a result of, you know, a political agenda that is, as far as we are aware, bent on seeing, you know, President Xi elected to a third term in October. Does that sound about right to you, or are you hearing something different across your clients?
You know, that sounds about right. I think, you know, the emphasis on stability, the emphasis on slowly but surely, I think sort of underlines the need for stable government. And so I think is going to reinforce the likelihood of presidencies re-election at the end of this year, and an insurance that there is much more sort of stable leadership with a very, very clear sense of purpose. And I do think you're right that will mean sort of emphasis on sort of domestic resilience, long-term stable growth rather than rapid growth. And that means it's not a golden time perhaps for multinationals that are looking for short-term fast wins within this economy. But I really believe that in this time, if you put down deeper roots, if you invest more, if you show your commitment through this period of sort of sowing the seeds for the longer term whilst coming through the winter, you're going to be part of that success in the longer term. And so businesses also need to be more resilient, also need to be looking at this period and saying, right, we're not, you know, this may be challenging, this may be difficult, we may have some difficult months and years ahead, but we've got, yeah, we I think that'll be recognized also by the leadership, recognized by government, and is being so those businesses that are demonstrating their long-term commitment, their long-term investments, their long-term contribution are being recognized and will be rewarded in the longer term.
And one final question, and it's a question I get asked a lot, and you've touched on it just then. How much longer term do you think this winter of COVID restrictions, border closures, political influence on the stock market and the economy more broadly is going to last?
At least another year. I can't see much changing through 2022. I think we're going to have a very challenging environment in the early part of 2023. So, you know, at least another year. And then I do hope that we can begin to see a sort of a renewed emphasis on growth opportunities in 2023 and latter part of 2023 and beyond. But this is a new, I think, you know, let's not look back and try to sort of reminisce and pine for those times that we had 5-10 years ago. I think this is a period that was happening in China's transition. It's happened quicker because of the circumstances we found ourselves in over the last few years. And this is a new era now, a new phase of multinationals operating in China. It's a much more mature and complex environment, and that will remain. So whatever we find ourselves in 2023, 24, it won't be like it was 5-6 years ago. And it'll be a new environment, which will come with greater challenges and more sophisticated opportunities for businesses operating in China.
Well, Jeff, you've left us with a light at the end of a tunnel of sorts, which I suppose is a good place to finish today's episode. Thanks for coming on the China Business Brief. You've made an excellent guest.
Thanks, Joe. Good to talk with you.
And we'll be back in 2 weeks' time with another episode. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye. The China Business Brief is a podcast brought to you by the China Britain Business Council. If you enjoyed this podcast, make sure you're subscribed. To find out more about our other events and activities, do check out our website at www.cbbc.org.